This is Making Docs. I'm Paul, an aspiring documentary film producer.
And I'm Caroline, a freelance documentary director.
Follow us on this journey where we speak to industry professionals to get practical advice.
In this episode, we visit Vice Media in London to meet with their award-winning lead video editor, Marta Velasquez. Marta has crafted and released over 70 short documentaries, many of which have gained critical acclaim in film festivals around the world. In this interview, we get some practical advice from her on editing short-form documentaries and ask about the editing process at Vice Media.
Marta, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So you work for Vice at the moment. Can you describe for me what it is you do here and how that happened to come about? How did you end up working at Vice?
I did what everyone else does and did a bit of running. Then I left because I couldn't afford it and I got a job. I made some money. I bought the equipment that I needed to edit and decided to do it on my own because I think the best way of learning to edit is to just edit. And then I made friends with a lot of people through film festivals, made films for lots of women directors, and ended up freelancing at Vice and all around London for 5 years. Eventually, after I'd been working at Vice often enough, they suddenly realised it would probably be a good idea if they made me full-time.
So Marta wasn't going home, basically. Yeah.
So they you know, checked their budgets and realised that maybe they were spending too much on freelancers.
And the position you're at the moment is?
So right now I'm lead editor. I started out as a senior editor. And then after a few years, I realised that maybe the team would need somebody who has been doing it for a long time to be able to step in if there's troubles.
What are you working on at the moment for Vice?
So it's a film about two teenage girls who are really big fans of Brexit. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a window into that side of their kind of opinions and the world that they live in and the bubble they live in and how they came to feel this way, how much they love Nigel Farage, and a kind of lesson in tolerance and how can you make a film about two views that you don't necessarily agree with without giving them a platform, but still making it a kind of story that everyone can follow and understand a bit more about their point of view.
Do you think you need to be objective in a way then? Like you cannot...
You need to make sure that they have their voice, but at the same time you need to make sure that you're not giving false information to the audience, mm-hmm. and you're not kind of leading the audience to suddenly all become Brexit fans, mm-hmm. but still give people the space to decide for themselves after knowing the facts.
Mm-hmm. So I assume you have to think about the opening, because when we talk about like producing teasers for potential executive producers or finding other team members, usually you hear the words opening with impact. Have you heard those? Like, what does it mean for an editor, opening with impact?
Well, if you think someone might be watching this on the phone and they might be scrolling through and you mm-hmm. have 10 seconds where they go, is that for me? Not every film is the same, though, so you can have different methods of catching in them in the first 10 seconds. Definitely the first shot is the most important. You can't just have, like, something boring.
The first frame.
Yeah, the first shot is just, like, if you have talent, you have to put them in that first shot.
How do you find these moments? Are these the moments in the footage where you say, oh, this is, like, the most dramatic ones or the crazy ones or, like, beautifully shot? Or how do you find these moments in a short film?
Well, for example, with the Favela Ballet one, mm-hmm. which is one about young girls who are ballerinas and want to become ballerinas, but they live in a favela in Brazil.
Bullets and ballet.
Bullets and ballet, yeah. So the most shocking moment was when there was a shootout whilst mm-hmm. they're practicing. That was something that happened much later on. And if you put that right at the beginning, when people are watching it, they go, but I want to see the moment when that happens. Mm-hmm. So you'll keep your audience until that moment mm-hmm. when it happens. And then they want to see the resolve. So it's a very clever way of putting a cold open that entices people to investigate further to try and work out what the hell was going on.
Is there any difference, do you think, in like the narrative story you tell in shorts than in comparison to features? Especially in shorts, I kind of assume you have, as you said, people nowadays look on the phones, they might dedicate 2-3 minutes to a video where you want to tell some information, you want to share emotion, you want to share and tell a story. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's like a different narrative structure you apply to shorts?
Well, you have to make sure that every single scene is moving the viewer forward to mm-hmm. the next scene. So you can't just have like the extra little scene where you're following maybe 5 different narratives at the mm-hmm. same time, which you could maybe do in a feature film. But here it needs to be, because people's attention span, it's not going to carry on if you're doing 5 different scenes in a short movie. It needs to be like building it around the strongest character and their trajectory.
You have to kind of please or talk to director, maybe executive producers. But what happens to the contributors, like the person that are in the film, the characters? Yeah. Do you know about reactions when they saw the film you edited? Did you hear about that? Or
yeah, and that's something that you have to be really sensitive about. Mm-hmm. Because, for example, we did one about Xanax in the UK. And there were some contributors that were very kind of mentally unstable. Probably the reason why they were taking it. And there were times when I was editing it thinking, you know, this guy, if this comes out and it gets very bad reactions, what's it going to do to him? And there were a lot of scenes where he would just appeared far too vulnerable and we had to take it back a bit for his sake. Yeah. Even though they were, like, heartbreaking. It's like, you just don't want to, like, make this person do the next jump. You know, I just kind of wrote to everyone and said, like, this is what I feel about it. Mm. Then when it came out, then people started writing horrible things. And I said, can you block all the comments? Mm. And then they said, we're just going to take it off YouTube.
Yeah, I suppose
that the person was more important than the film.
You guys do so much material here and your stuff is so hard hitting and edgy as well that there is the potential that that could happen, actually.
Mm. Can you tell us a little bit more about the process? So you get the footage of a short film, of a potential short film. So how long does it take for you to go through the footage? Do you know in advance what the film is going to be about? Do you have a script you apply your editing to? So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
When we first get the footage, we ask the director to sit with us to make sure that we've got all the footage in the project, mm-hmm. that everything that's been shot, we have it. Mm-hmm. Then they can leave.
And they are free to go.
And they're free to go shoot more stuff. Then we can organise the edit. So we have to break it down into every day that was shot. And then we have to break every day that was shot into scenes. And you need everything that is for that scene in that one sequence. That's your base sequence. Mm-hmm. Then you duplicate that sequence when you rename it. Mm-hmm. And that will be your first edit for that scene. Mm-hmm. Then you can start deleting everything from there, but you still have your original backup. Then you condense that, so that's your first edit, duplicate it again. The further down the line you go, you still have a trail of everything that you've done.
Very thorough and also quite time consuming.
If you do it this way, when you need to go back, when the director comes in, you can say, oh yes, I did that before, do you want to see that bit? And you've always got a trail of everything you've done. And you can show the bits that you've taken out.
So it's there for reference for the director as well. Because I'm so used to, as an independent editor on my own, I don't think about doing that as much because I'm so familiar with the material.
Yeah.
Whereas if I had someone that I had to bring into it, that makes perfect sense, actually.
It's quite helpful for yourself as well because we're human beings and we make mistakes. Mm-hmm. And we sometimes delete things that we wish we hadn't deleted. Mm-hmm. And if you know exactly where you had it in the last cut, then it's really easy to just go back and put it back in. Then you need to plan the structure. Uh-huh. And the way that we do that is we get post-it notes and you write what the name of each scene is, stick it on a wall, and that's your first structure that you're working towards. Mm-hmm. The post-it notes are good because you can keep changing them.
Different colours and
you can just
different things.
Yeah, you can keep moving where they go in the order
without
of things.
Without destroying the edit.
Without destroying the edit. And you can both sit there and visualise it together. Yeah. And then you have to start thinking about the music and the graphics and the archive and the commentary whilst you're going along.
How long does this process usually take until now, what you describe?
If you have a 3-day shoot, it will take you about 3 days for each day.
Okay, triple.
Depending on how many interviews you have. So an hour interview should take you about a day to go through. Nowadays, though, we have auto-transcribe software, so you can just put it through artificial intelligence transcriber and it will spit out a transcript, and then you'll be able to highlight the bits that you actually need.
Yeah.
Then you don't have to listen to all of it and you have a record. And it also even puts captions on the footage, so you can just click on it and find the bit that you're looking for.
Wow. That's amazing. AI helping out with filmmaking.
Yeah.
Just great.
I'll have to come to Vice with my projects.
But I imagine like the director has a script they film after,
they
right?
They have or maybe a idea of what they wished to achieve. But as you know, on set, it doesn't always go to plan. Mm-hmm. Especially with documentary, you kind of want to keep it fresh. So they might have a beginning script, like a proposal, but then by the time it gets to you, it's very different to what it was supposed to be. And then it's a case of watching it and going, well, I think that this would be good, and suggesting it. This isn't the way that all editors work. A lot of editors work with scripts.
They shoot the whole footage and then mm-hmm. bring it to you, or do you edit while shooting? Can that also happen?
At the moment, I'm editing while shooting. In the past, it has been where they just bring it all and I do it. But mm-hmm. at the moment, they're kind of catching me early.
Isn't that a better way of working with the production team? Because then you can influence what they shoot.
Exactly, yeah.
So you do?
It has been now, yeah.
I know that everybody might hate the editor then, because you're the one saying, nope, I don't need that. And as a filmmaker, you go out and know you're shooting something, I don't know, that you've waited for 2 weeks to get access to that one special person you think. And then the editor says, nope, I won't need any of this interview.
No, it's
can
really
that be
hard.
Cruel?
It is really hard. But in the end, they know that it's all about what is best for the film. Mm-hmm. And I will never not put it in if they really want it in.
Mm-hmm.
But then the exec producer might take it out. You know, we all make mistakes as well. So we all have to be able to say, actually, you were right. It was a good idea to put it back in. Or, you know, you have to be humble and you have to experiment and give the director the voice to kind of put across what they were trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
So you break down the material,
yes.
you have the post-it notes,
yes.
You're working with the director and producer to get the film done.
Yes.
I'm thinking more on a practical level, working with, I believe, is it Premiere that you use here?
Yes.
Or is it, do you have any, you've been doing this for so long, do you have any little tips about or quirks that you do with the edit or with Premiere that maybe other people don't?
I think marking every time a... With Premiere, you can put a marker on the footage.
It's like M. Is it Command
an
M?
Yeah. Every time that the director is asking a question to either the host or the subject, if you write down what that question is, then you know throughout the whole movie you can search it
mm-hmm.
and you can find it in the footage.
Oh, you can add text to the marker.
Yeah, you add the question to the marker
mm-hmm.
and then you can search
it. So you can click into the marker and type out the question. I didn't know you could do that.
I made it in the markers accidentally if I make them.
Yeah.
But I think that's great to use them for.
And then whenever you know, like, did the person ever ask him about that? You just search it
mm-hmm.
in the search bar.
Keep going, Marta. Is there any more tips?
So the way that I make a longer edit shorter, which I've started to teach to my assistants to do for me,
mm-hmm.
is that when I'm looking at this footage, I will lift from track V1 to track V2 everything that I think is worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go through it all, lifting everything that's worthwhile. And
I do that one.
Yeah.
Well, actually, yeah,
and then at the end of it, I'll delete everything that's in V1.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I like that one as well. I do that one for the guys listening, and I'm an amateur.
There you go.
So.
You've thought about it.
Very good.
Working like a pro.
But also in terms of the process, then.
Yeah.
So you've got your post-it notes, and
yes.
you've got the edit broken down. You're reviewing it with the director. What's the process from there?
Then we have to have a first rough cut screening, which is with the director and the executive producer. And while you're showing this for the first time, you can get these feelings when you're showing things to people. And it's really important not to ignore them, because if you feel like really nervous about certain bits, it's because there's something that doesn't quite work.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they start looking at their phone, that's not a good idea. That's not a good signal. It means you have to change it or delete it. Then you get to feedback. They feedback to you, and you have to make sure you write everything down.
That must be hard as well, to get the feedback after you've put your creative skills into something, and then they have some kind of edit that they want to make that you don't agree with.
Mm.
Kind of messes it up. How do you manage that?
I think a lot of the time I'm quite open to people having suggestions in a way that I can try it and I can show them if it works or not. Mm-hmm. I'm never judgmental as to, oh, that's a stupid idea. I think maybe I'm quite lucky. I work with a lot of people that I think are quite good. And people who are not as experienced seem to just take my advice. So that quite helps. Mm-hmm. In the end, you're just making a movie. You're not kind of trying to save someone's life. And you've got to leave your ego at the door.
So you get the feedback from the producer and the director after the first cut, and then what happens?
Okay. Sometimes, well, you'll sit with the director and you'll go through all the changes. Sometimes they'll sit with you, sometimes you'll do it on your own. Then you'll show it to them, have the second screening. This is when you're starting to fine cut a lot more, which is, you know, making sure that you're always cutting on action, making sure that you're kind of overlapping your sound so that you can't feel the cuts anymore.
So the rough cut is so much longer than the actual final cut, yeah?
Can be a lot, yeah. Rough cut can be like half an hour. Final cut could be like 15 minutes.
Okay.
So what's your advice from jumping from the rough cut to more of a final cut when it comes to being quite ruthless with the content?
You have to understand people's attention spans. You're getting paid to listen to stuff, so you have more of an attention span. But if you take it out, like upload it onto we have this thing called Frame.io, where we watch everything. Upload it and take it home.
Frame.io, what's that?
It's like a viewing platform on the internet, a bit like Vimeo, but you can write notes on it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and you can
tick
if you've made those notes.
Like a collaboration tool.
Yeah, like a collaboration tool. So you can upload it onto there and you take it away and watch it outside of work. And see
if you're still interested.
And see if with everything else that's going on around you, on the tube or, you know, in the, like, walking the kids down the park, whether you can still concentrate on keeping attention span of this thing that you've created. And that's when you realize that you need to get there quicker and quicker and quicker until there's just the best bits left. If you have 10 really beautiful shots, but they're all saying the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
They're all of the same thing. They're all, you know, somebody dancing really nicely. How many of those shots will you use to tell that part of the story?
My God, all of them.
You've just got to choose the best one. Because after the best one, the rest just fade.
You've done
your audience
screenings to your director producer. Yeah. You might have done a group screening to the other editors.
Yeah.
And then surely it's all easy from there.
Then you do your final pass.
What's the final pass? Right?
It's like make sure that you've got the best B-roll that you could possibly have and swap a few of those shots. Like you've got the story arc already, but you just want to make sure that go back to your original footage one more time and double check through all that B-roll and all those kind of niggly bits that maybe you weren't that happy with and just swap them. Hope that nobody notices. And then you deliver the sequence and then they approve it, hopefully, and then you pass it on to the online team and then they start prepping it for grading, for audio, the graphics, if you haven't made them yourself. And then
start to prep it for colour and audio.
They flatten the sequence. Let's say you have 3 layers of interview, but you're only showing one angle at a time, but you still have 3 angles on the sequence. Mm-hmm. You have to make sure that only the angle that is visible is on the sequence, so the sequence is flat.
So the sequence is flat, so that means there's only one consistent line on the timeline.
On the timeline. And there's no like extra little bits of clips that you're not actually using that you've kind of...
Why is that important to do?
Because when you pass it on to the grading... they need to kind of move it from one program to another and then reconnect them. And if they're reconnecting loads of little bits that we aren't actually used, it just delays the whole process and confuses things.
Mm-hmm.
So you just want to try and deliver like the most neatest sequence you can.
Mm-hmm.
So someone's job here is to pick up the projects and just do that?
Yes, sometimes.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the job you want to do?
I could do that.
Great. So are you involved in the post-production process or once you deliver it in a way that's
I kind of move on from one to the other quite quickly.
So once they've added their professional touch to the colour and sound, what happens next?
Then that one final check, and then it will get translated into about 50 different languages. And then they'll upload that each language stream to YouTube, and then we'll kind of syndicate it through YouTube, through Instagram, through Snapchat. They'll cut down like little bits of the film for Instagram, like 10-second bits, just to kind of support the film and kind of take over the whole world with it for a week or something.
By this time, you've already started the next one.
Yeah. Yeah.
So through your experience of learning to be a really good editor, you've actually learned how to maybe shoot quite well yourself, because you know what shots maybe work, and you might be able to host the documentary because you've seen it done so many times in the edit, whether that's good or bad.
Yeah.
Did you feel as though you've learned more than just editing then through the process of learning editing?
I think it would probably be very different actually doing it yourself. And my hat's off to them, I think. It's so easy to just criticize. But definitely the kind of directing, because I know what works in the edit, is something that definitely you learn through editing as well. Because then you think what shots you're missing. And then when you're there, you think what shots do we need? So you kind of start editing in your head while you're out on the shoot.
Have you got any top 3 tips for editors out there?
If you have 10 beautiful shots, then choose the best one of those shots.
Okay. Oh, God. Okay. That's the hardest one, probably, or is it?
The other one was stay organized, so know where everything is in your project, because...
Do you have a system for that? Do you have your own system for that?
I have a system that is maybe used by most, which is just have one folder with every sequence that is your dailies, and then another one which is the scenes.
So create a sequence for each day?
Yes.
And put each day footage and the sequence into a folder? Okay.
So each day, there's one folder with day one, day two, day three, day four, day five, day six. And then there's another folder where I've just named them in scenes and I've put my own numbers on them in the order that I think they might go in the film. So I've got like 001, 002.
Like a start, middle, and end.
Yeah. And I'll kind of name the scenes, but I'll have all the extra footage that I haven't put in the edit for those scenes, but it'll be there.
So you'll,
I
know name where to the find scenes.
It. I will name the scenes, yeah, because the dailies will just be the date.
Okay. How will you name them? Like a description of what the scene is about, or do you have invent titles?
I'll have like the name of who's speaking to who.
Oh, okay.
Or I'll have that they're visiting this place. It would just be something that's very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And those names will correspond with my post-it notes on the wall. Also the numbers on the sequences, I'll put the same numbers on my post-it notes on the wall. So if I move them around here, I know which ones by number.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay, and the third one?
Third one, duplicate your sequence. Because you spend so long editing something and you've made something that you're really proud of, and then the next moment you're going to just pull it apart. You're just going to duplicate that sequence and you're just going to copy a whole bunch of stuff from one place to another, and you don't know if it's going to work, but you've got to try it.
So you get the footage and very briefly, bullet points, what do you do with it?
Get the footage, organize it, watch it, pull out the selects, narrow down those selects into individual scenes, make a structural post-it note plan, put those scenes in that plan, start watching it, think about the beginning, for example, what's your mission, who are the characters, what is the conflict, and what's the outcome. Have viewings with other people, take in every single bit of advice, but don't necessarily think that what they tell you is the way to solve it. After you've dealt with every problem, just let go. Just be able to let go. That's quite hard to let go. To stop
actually,
fiddling.
Actually, yes. I was like, yeah, great. Yeah. It's the hardest part. Yeah. Thinking, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And one last question of mine that I would like you to hear your opinion on. We are two women working in a more, well, still male-dominated industry. I think it's changing, but yeah. Still, we work probably with more male colleagues than other women. What is your advice, or how do you see our future in the industry? Like, do you think there are more female filmmakers? I mean, you're a female editor in a lead position. Do you have that in mind when you hire new people? Or
yeah, definitely. The crews need to be really diverse, and having an editor who's female is actually really in demand at the moment.
Why is that?
Because people are opening their eyes in that films with women's kind of point of view are doing really well because there's a lack of it, that when it does happen, they do really well. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that we're covering the kind of female audience. But what I think is really important is that we're not just women making films for women.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be women making films for men and men making films for women. And because if you don't understand the voice and where you're coming from a woman's perspective or a man's perspective, then you'll never reach equality because you'll never be in each other's shoes. I just really hate the kind of that's a woman's story thing. Mm, I think you just need to make stories that appeal to everyone.
So there might be a lot of people listening to this who think Vice is really cool. I'd love to maybe edit for Vice. How do you get a job at Vice?
You have to prove yourself. You have to have a documentary that you've edited that you have managed to overcome lots of problems, or you know, it hasn't been straightforward, because that's what we get here, is a lot of not very straightforward documentaries.
Like a feature or shorts?
Shorts is great. You need to get out there. I mean, the London Documentary Film Network is great for their 48-hour challenges because they teach people how to make short films really quickly. And if you have
we haven't
edited,
told Marta to say that.
They didn't pay Marta.
If you have edited a few short films at a short turnaround and you've done a good job of it and you can come to us and say, look, I've got these skills, we're very much open to people who are young and amateur and want to improve their skills, and we're actually looking to hire soon. So send me your CV, Marta@vice.com with your CV, but just make sure that you have got some solid documentary editing experience.
Thanks for your time today, Marta. Really appreciate it. And it's blown my mind a little bit, the fact that you can add comments to the markers and then sort them.
You learned something, yeah.